So like I said, today I've got somebody young and fresh, I should say talented from what I've... You know, what happened is that this guy, you know, normally when people come into where I work, you know, I normally Google them, try to find out who are they, where do they come from. And I came across profiling Yana Yaha and things that he does. And as a very young man, I was like, this is an inspiration to the other young people. So I just want to get him into the show so that he can inspire those who are young and old, because you're never too old to get inspired.
Oh, yeah, true.
The name Yaha, it's Kenneth D. Olene. Yeah. Yes. So I'll just let him to actually intro himself, you know. Let me not do the honors for him. Let him do all the honors.
Yes. Hello, Kenny.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Welcome.
Thank you for having me in the first place. So my name is Kenneth Diale. Introduction. It's only such a difficult question.
Tell us about yourself.
No, like, yeah. Well, so who am I? My name is Kenneth. I come from Northwest, from a township called Atamelang. I'm this side by virtue of educational ambition and career prospects. Mm-hmm. So what do I do? Currently, I work at GIBS as well, okay. In the Center for Leadership and Dialogue. Outside of that, I'm involved in a number of projects. Currently, I'm starting my own youth advisory consultancy, DOLOID, with a co-founder of mine. And that looks at how do we encompass a number of key pertinent youth development aspects. Because aside from that, I'm an opinionista for the Daily Maverick. I write for them.
Nice.
I am a member of the South African Institute of International Affairs Youth Policy Committee, where I focus specifically on economic growth and youth unemployment specifically. Mm. I also serve as a director for a non-governmental organization in Ghana called Innovation for Empowerment and Development. Mm. I do debating. I do mentorship. I do a number of things.
Boss levels. Boss levels.
So you understand.
Yeah.
You guys understand.
Jack of all trades, master of eight.
Yeah.
Master of eight.
Yeah.
All right. So in short, that's who I am.
Yeah, welcome.
Welcome.
So I just want to know what did you actually study? Because I know what you studied, but I just want you to tell the people or the listeners what you studied.
So I studied political science and international relations. I also had subjects outside of that scope, which were like environmental science, because I'm very passionate about social justice. Mm-hmm. So whether it comes in the form of climate change and advocating for a greener society. Mm-hmm. But I think politics specifically, because growing up, I think I didn't have a lot of books, but my dad reads newspapers like crazy. So I started reading that. And obviously you go to school and then some questions are asked for general knowledge and you know that.
And then you know that.
Yeah. And then you start reading a lot, you know. And then I started doing public speaking. I started doing debating. And I was fortunate enough to compete overseas as well in high school. And so I think that was the culmination of saying, you know what, this is where you want to go into the politics, the international relations space. How do I get together with other collective minds and, you know, we draft policy or we draft legislation that literally is about the empowerment of people. So I decided to go to politics and international relations as a basis, because I think the thing about politics and IR, we think is just what we see on TV every day, you know, and I think it's much broader and it's much more intense than that. And I think it manifests in different ways, you know. So now I find myself in a business school, but I think the beauty of where I find myself now is that I used the background of what I studied, but also my interest in entrepreneurship and everything, and I synergize the two into the work that I do, you know. So I think my background is now obviously a basis. I'm still going to study further into it. Like, I'm starting with my honors in development studies this coming semester, and then hopefully masters in different things. But I think the core basis of why I study politics is I'm very passionate about social justice, and that's why even within the things that I mentioned, it's all about youth empowerment. It's about how do we eradicate youth unemployment, how do we, you know, deal with the very systemic and structural challenges of our country and, you know, the broader African continent at large. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I think my next question was about, what is really your passion? Because you talk about a lot of things, debating, you're talking about politics, you're talking about international relations and all of that. So what really is your passion? What motivates you to get up and say,
I think the question of passion is always such a subjective one. Because for me, I'm a passionate person. I don't commit to anything that I'm not passionate to, you know? But I think everything that I do manifests from my want or my fundamental need to see social justice. Mm. So whether that comes in the form of this unemployment rate that we're seeing currently so high, what are we doing about it? You know, so I'm going to be passionate about programs and activations, whatever it is, that looks at solving that particular matter, mm-hmm. you know. When there's a particular issue, like this, let's say beginning of the year when there was xenophobic attacks, you know, I have friends who come from different countries. As I said, I also, you know, do a lot of things within people in Ghana, you know, so I'm passionate about that. So that will mean that there's a stake for me to claim in that space and advocate, you know. So my passion is social justice, but how it manifests in different things, you know. And I hope that answers your question, because I can't boil it down and say, no, I just love debating only, or I just love this. Because even when you debate, you debate about different topics and so forth. And so you see different elements that you care about. And I think, yeah, so essentially I would say social justice, especially for people who are previously disadvantaged, is for me my core passion. Mm.
And I think debating and public speaking are two different things.
Yes, yes.
So which one would you say do you enjoy best?
I would say debating. Reason being, and that's very, it's quite a difficult one to choose, but I would say debating because I think for me it opened out a number of paths and a number of where I am now, right? So maybe if I go a bit back, 2011 I was introduced to this competition called Model United Nations Debating by Education Africa. So what it did, basically, it took two learners from a privileged school and a disadvantaged school and paired them together, and you guys would debate, they would be given a country to represent, for example, maybe Brazil, on the topic of, let's say, climate change, right? Mm-hmm. And every team would be given the same topic, but you'd be representing different countries. So you come together, you share resources with your privileged school, you share knowledge and whatnot. And you do research for an intense for about 2.5 months. You go compete at provincials. If you win, you go to Cape Town. And if you go abroad, you go to New York, right? So I was fortunate enough to go through that entire process, and I competed in New York in 2012. So I think ever since that stage for me, I think I realized that there's so many things that I was not aware of, mainly because of background or because of just the general conversation that we have on a daily basis. But I think because debating got me to a point where I raise my level of critical engagement, and I think that's something that we need to work on as a nation at the moment, because we're very topical, you know, we want things that just trend, but we don't want to have critical conversations about things that really matter. You know, when you speak of unemployment, it's not just the number, you know, it's a lot of people who are affected by that. It's mainly young people who are affected by that, and we need to get to the core roots of it, you know, because I think because we lack that understanding of critically engaging on a number of issues, we take things for granted. You know, they become just headlines every day, and like, oh, you know, the unemployment is bad, and then we move on and go have drinks or whatever it is that people do, you know. And for me, that is quite worrisome, because as a former student, but also as a student activist or advocate, actually, I would say, is that in the broader aspect of things, you see people who are directly impacted by these things. You work with a lot of people who are, you know, at least victors from these circumstances, and you feel like there's a fundamental need to not only give back, but to create sustainable solutions, and that requires critical conversation. I think that's where debating comes in, because it teaches you to critically engage whatever the topic is and understand, analyze it, go to the deep-rooted causes about it, and see how do we fix it from there, and not just talk about it from a surface level as we often do. Yeah,
I want to find out, how do we take that from just being a conversation? You said passionate about social justice.
Yeah.
So identifying the problem, the key areas that are social justice, and then identifying that, I could say, it has to be a specific problem, and then moving it from being
points.
Conversational
action,
and then the next step, especially what's been washed about the political landscape in the country.
I think it happens in two ways. I think the first one I would argue is that you need to understand it. So you have to choose a topic. We're not all going to care about everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, if I use an example and say, let's use the unemployment rate, right?
Yeah.
So as we speak in South Africa, there's about 27.7% unemployment rate. But 50.9% of that 27 is young people under the age of 25. Right? Between the ages of 15 and 25, for example, one in every three young people is neither in employment, is not neither employed, neither in any educational institution or in any form of training. You know, most of these people who are affected by that unemployment stay out of what we call the economic hubs. So they stay within the peripheries of our cities. Mm-hmm, so your Alex, your Deep Slough, and your rural areas, right? So that's how you start to dissect it, you know.
Yeah.
So you look at a topic like that and then go break it down. Break it down to who it is affecting the most, why it is affecting them the most, you know. If you take that, for example, that example that I gave you and say, but why is that circumstance not changing? Then you factor in, last year, I think, the National Treasury released a report called the 40-40-40, right? That's says 40% of working class people spend 40 minutes or more on transport, on going to work, mm-hmm. spend 40% of their disposable income on transport a month. They live in 40 square meter houses, mm. and I forgot what the other 40 stands for, right? But I'll remember it now. And so that is a problematic narrative, right? Because it tells you that most adults who are working in these spaces do not have enough time, for example, to invest in their children's education by helping them out, to see if they're making sufficient progress, to invest in other extramural activity which could help them. Three, it tells you about the time that we do not have to engage each other, even in our own households. You know, you come back tired from school, you don't even know at times how well your kid is doing, or you're unable to go to their school, right? So when we start breaking things down to that level, we can start to say, oh, wait, maybe at the root cause of this is the level of education, and the quality of that education that they're receiving, as well as the education beyond the classroom, as I like to call it. So what do we do outside of the classroom? Do you just go play, or do we invest in extramural activity that's going to stimulate your mind? You know, so I think it starts like that. That's the first part. So understanding a situation to the core root. Two, looking at avenues that exist. I think oftentimes one of the things that we tend to do is we relegate a lot of our own civic duties to government or to somebody else or to a leader, whatever the case is. And I think it is high time as South Africans that we understand that a lot of the problems that we're facing are going to require more than just the leaders that we've put into place. And I think once we individually start taking action, then most of these leaders will start realizing that, wait, the people are angry and the people are doing things on themselves. That means we must also elevate our standard of performance, our standard of whatever it is, you know. So, for example, how do I then take that issue and start working? So what I am busy working with a friend of mine is that we realize that There's a number of young people, at least from our township levels, who are disenfranchised by virtue of where they stay, by virtue of lack of money, and many other situations. So we are starting a mentorship organization called Arithusane. We'll be launching it later this year. And that is aimed at what do we see as the challenges in our community. So we have students who perform quite well, maybe end of the matric, but they chose the wrong subjects. They don't have access to funding and all these things. So they don't have knowledge. So one of the things that we're going to do is that we're going to create a careers day for grade 11s and 12s specifically, but also for grade 9s who are about to choose subjects, so that they are knowledgeable about what they need to do. Two, we're going to try and partner up with local entities to start looking about how can we, in as much as we want to get bursaries, but also as a community, you know, 2 rand, imagine if everybody in a community, let's say, for example, gave 10 rand a month to something or less, you know, how much the pool of money that would be accumulated to ensure that we are sending the young people in our community to school would be so impactful in the long run, you know. So look at something like that where we can have a collective, like what we do, Stockfell-like for education.
Yeah, Stockfell for education. Yeah.
Exactly,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And then the two last element, one would be a reading club. So I'm busy trying to collect, or I'm starting to collect books so that we can start getting people, young people who are not in school, or even those who are in school, outside of school, to start reading a number of things. Financial literacy is something that a lot of us lack, even working class people. That's why so many of us are in debt. You know, we don't have basic financial literacy. You don't understand, you know, when you get your income statement, you know, the deductibles and how much you have and so forth. And so there's a lack of knowledge in that. So one, we're going to try and get books on financial literacy so that we can start teaching young people from a young age so they can be more responsible going forward. And then fourth, we, you know, I, on a personal note, I do a lot of mentoring. So I have about five or seven mentees at the moment, but we're going to try and formalize that as a structure, get working class people in the community and young people who have been able to go study and work and whatnot to see how can we try and start passing down certain knowledge and certain ethics and what we have learned, you know, because even things as basic as a CV, you know, most people still use the first CV template that they learned in grade 10, you know, and unfortunately then, even if they are qualified for a job, because they still use that, they're automatically disqualified before they even get to that level, you know, because it's not the right type of thing. So I think for me, it's about looking at what can we do at a basic level, you know. And I think once we get the basics right, then we can start elevating, start looking at different things, and I think then the impact will be tremendous, you know, in the long run. But yeah, that's what I would say.
100%. Now.
I just want to know, how on earth do you juggle everything that you do? On top of like what you've just mentioned, that you've got 7 mentees.
Yeah.
And
where we work, it's not actually
I can
where
imagine.
He works, it's not really a child's play. So yeah.
How do you do it? Like,
you create time.
Where do you get that much time?
You create it.
I think, you know, one thing I realize is that It's difficult to actually answer you straight, because, but the thing is, I sleep about maximum of 4.5 hours a day, on a weekly basis, you know, and I spend most of my weekends working and traveling, you know, to do these different things. But I think what's also important, what I've realized because of my age, is that one, you have to start developing certain habits at a young age, so that in the long run they become part and parcel of who you are as a person. So I don't waste time on a number of things. So, for example, you know, if you're taking the train to go to work as an example, you know, that's 40 minutes that you can use to read, listen to the radio simultaneously. So you're already covering a certain element of it. You know, at work, generally, yes, you know your productive hours. You know, nobody's productive.
Yeah, no.
Day,
you
know? I hope they're not doing
But even studies show it, actually. There was a study recently that came out that most people actually are productive for about 4 hours at maximum a day, you know. But, I mean, like, even if you do that, what I'm fortunate about is that now where I work and with my director specifically is that the environment creates for you to even get ideas about what to do and learn, you know. But I would say, I think some of the things I always try and say, you need to do work that will allow you to make yourself redundant in the long run. Yeah. So when you set up an organization, ensure that you are training people, ensure that you have the right support structure, so that once at some point you can, you know, eliminate yourself from the process and that it can run itself. You know, so even with the mentees, we don't always have to meet. We can Skype, we can WhatsApp things, you know, and that saves time, that saves money. Yeah, you do that.
So is it correct to assume that you're unmarried and unchilded?
Yeah,
I'm
still very young.
It is not necessarily. It is not necessarily assumed that I'm on the market.
9 minutes before nine, man. It is the Blessings Avenue. All Radio Veritas. We are hanging out with Kenneth. Kenneth Diole, representing Atamelang Northwest Bukoni Buphirima. Father Kabelo says, wow, awesome guy you have there in studio. Greetings
indeed,
to the guy, and he inspires me a lot. So yes, continue being inspiration.
Isn't that sweet?
Yeah, so maybe the last question, so that we can let you go on. So what, you know, let's just ask you the famous question. What advice do you have for especially listeners and people who want to be like you and live their passion, not necessarily do what you do, but, you know,
I think be rooted. You know, as I was doing my research with about the station and so forth, and I realized actually this is my second interview, but the other one was 2015 or 14, you know? But I think one of the things I realized is based on a particular thing, on a spiritual element, and I'm anchored by my spirituality as well. You know, whenever I speak, whenever I work, I always, you know, I would pray. I'm like, God, even if I'm not preaching, utilize me so that whoever is at the receiving end of what I'm saying is touched in a different way, you know? So I'm anchored by my spirituality. So that's the first thing. Find something that anchors you as a person, and work on it. Manifest it every day. As you know, before this, I was listening to that. You know, you have to engage in your scripture. You have to engage, and you have to have your own revelation of that scripture, and that is quite important. So the first thing is find an anchor. The second thing is be in the space, the proximity of people who inspire you. I have people only say a circle of friends. I have a line because I have very few people in my friendship, you know. So I don't think we are big enough to make a circle, you know. And the reason for that is that as we start to train, you start to understand that it's important that you have people who inspire you in their work, but who equally can celebrate you as if whatever it is that they're doing, whatever it is that you are doing or they are doing, you can celebrate as if it's your own. And I'm fortunate to have those people who are doing great things, and, you know, even acquaintances and whatever the case. So find people who inspire you. You know, they can be on different fields, different things, and start connecting with those people. Ask them what is driving them. Share their knowledge. Engage in what their passion is, and find what is it that then moves you. You know, because I think once you find that yourself in those spaces, you have to at least maintain a certain standard, because you're understanding of the proximity under within you is that these are people who are maintaining a high standard of what it is that you want, you know. And I think that's important. So find the people who inspire in your life and get inspiration from them, but you must also equally be able to inspire them, you know, because that's how it's a two-way street, you know. And I would say third and arguably most importantly is understand that everything takes time. I think one of the things that we tend to do is think that things happen instantaneously. Because if I share something on Facebook, oh, hey, I'm on radio or whatever the case may be, people think, yo, why is this guy always doing this? But what you don't understand that, you know, moments like this or the previous ones have been years in the making. You know, they started with the first time you took, you know, the challenge of maybe doing public speaking, not knowing that it will lead you to debating or traveling to other countries or stuff like that. You know, that's important. Learn to understand that time is important, but in that time, take the time to perfect the small things. At the basis, I always say you can build a house, but if the foundation, you know, it's not right, it's going to collapse at some point. So learn to build yourself. So what are your values? What are your key values? What are the people around you? What inspires you? What wakes you up at night, as you guys asked just earlier? And I think at the core of those things, you will start to see a change, a fundamental change, because then you start to discipline yourself in a manner of ways. When are you waking up? What are you doing? What is your routine? You know, when are you adding the important elements to your life, and how are you prioritizing certain things? You know, because I think depending on the kind of life that you want, you need to be able to say at some point, maybe I don't have so much time, at least in the moment, for friends, but I can contact them once in a while because I'm building this thing. Mm-hmm. Or if that's not who you are, you can say, then this time I will use for reading, for you know, education beyond the classroom or the university and whatever the case is. So you need to be able to say at the core, what are my priorities and how am I integrating all these things in my being, and then, you know, developing that. Because I think in the long run, they will all position you well and give you opportunities that you didn't even think about.
Kenneth, you're on this.
I think you know, I'm just listening to you and I'm thinking maybe we should have taken the whole show from 7 until 9 o'clock.
That's what I'm thinking. And I wish we had more time.
Wow.
Kenneth Diole, guys, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We can only, you know, wish you and pray for the best going forward here.
Yeah.
And we all already know it's a little more.
Thank you for inspiring.
Continue inspiring.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. You'll be back again. I think they agree. You'll be back again. And I actually want you to come and talk about that CV thing, because that's something that we normally preach, you know, so that the people can actually understand,
yeah,
you know, about,
talk about
when you're talking about a CV, what has to go into a CV, and how well must it be presented.
I deeply agree with that, because I think it also serves your audiences, you
most
know, with knowledge.
We'll
do that. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. Thank you, team. Thank you, team. Thank you, Tuso. Thank you, Lee. Thank you, Nicole, once again. It has been another tremendous edition of Number 729
Blessings Avenue.
Are you ready for your blessings? We just received them in the form of Kenneth Dion.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. All right.